This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it looks like we made it to another end of a week.
Another
busy
Thursday.
Broadcasting week.
God, I can't believe we are literally at the halfway point right now. We are on the 15th at midday. So we are halfway through the first month of 2026 already, and I cannot believe it.
It feels like it's going to go screaming by like 25 did. And honest to gosh, watching being out there on X doing show prep today, boy, do I feel like we are on the precipice.
Yeah.
Like teetering on the edge, looking down into the abyss if we don't yank ourselves back. Whew.
Yeah, it is some crazy times right now. I think that's the simplest way to put it.
I think it is. But a lot of those things we don't have control over. Those are out of, you know, they're national issues, they're international issues. What we do have control over is what happens locally, what happens in the Willamette Valley, Salem Kaiser, and of course, City Council. So today we haven't had her on in a while, and we're so delighted to welcome her back. Ward 4 Salem City Councilor, Deanna Gwynn. Councilor, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here today.
Good to see you. Thanks for letting me come and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's been a while, and everyone listening knows that I do watch those meetings, so I do see what goes on. I always, my caveat and my coming clean is I always need an adult beverage to do it. So God bless you for
being there.
without an adult beverage.
Without an adult beverage.
Praying for one sometimes.
that glass of Malbec helps to make it go down a little smoother. But it's been a bit since we've had you. So again, I want to have you reintroduce yourself to everybody. You are, again, counselor for Ward 4. You're running for re-election, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But share a little bit about yourself, Deanna.
So I am, like you said, Salem City Councilor. This is almost the end of my first term. I have decided to go ahead and run again. I'm also a licensed real estate broker, principal broker at Windermere Heritage here in Salem. Mm-hmm. I'm married. Actually, my 35th wedding anniversary is coming up on Monday, on the 19th.
Oh.
So yeah,
35
years. I don't know how he has put up with me for this long.
God bless him. I have to say the same for the mustache. We celebrated 35 years in December last year. So yeah, they're lucky men. Come on now.
They are.
So you don't make them sit through the council meetings then.
No. Well, the mustache did sit through the special meeting, but anyway, that's a whole different story. So like you said, so it's interesting because we talked to you when you were running for office, and now here you are almost 4 years in. Give us some of your thoughts on sort of your evolution from the time you were running. Shed some light on that. What are your thoughts on that now that you're here?
So now that I'm here, and just thinking about myself. So as a realtor and as a woman, we tend to be very nurturing. So we're all about relationships and wanting people to like us, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the hard reality is we have to make some really tough decisions that are going to make people angry. So that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah.
You know? And even my friends sometimes, they're like, what were you thinking? And so I have to really, I want to always think about the big picture and not just that one decision that we're making today. Because decisions that we make at a city council level today can affect people for literally generations.
Yeah,
so
that's absolutely true. Yeah, and any given vote, you may tick off half the town.
Right.
And so that I can imagine, especially like you said, women are nurturers, and we want to kind of get along, and it can be really jarring, especially with social media added to the mix,
because
someone meeting you at like the deli counter at Fred Meyer isn't necessarily going to get all up in your face, but they might do it online.
Well, and that's what's so sad is people will be so cruel and mean online. But they won't have the same posture when they see you in person. So I actually have several folks in Ward 4 who don't align with me politically and don't always agree, but they're always willing to have a conversation.
That's
and those
great.
Are yeah, those are the folks that I actually appreciate. And I'll go to them and ask them, so why is it that you feel a certain way. So those open conversations are very, very helpful.
And those are really good, especially because, you know, I think everybody can kind of see what the problems are. There's just different ways of approaching them. So that's right. Kudos to you for doing that. Difficult decisions. Of course, we need to mention, obviously, what happened with the Kyle Hedquist on the police review board and how that vote went down. Can you shed a little light on how that went?
Well, number one, that was not a difficult decision for me at mm-hmm. all. I don't know if you did listen to what I had to say, but I had a I had a family member when I was very young that was killed at the hands of another person. Mm-hmm. I was only like 9 or 10 years old, so I don't remember the incident itself, but I do what I do, and it still touches me today, the mm-hmm. impact that it had and still has on my family. So as I was listening to the argument for that gentleman to be on our citizen mm-hmm. review board, I mm-hmm. just kept thinking about the families that were impacted by the acts that, and it wasn't just, not that it's just, but it wasn't right. one act. Mm-hmm. There were multiple things that he did. So it just brought me back to that 10-year-old self when my uncle was killed and how it affected our family. And like I said, how it still affects our family. So I knew that Nikki Thrasher's family, friends, community, they're still hurting. Mm-hmm. And that hole can never be filled. And while her memory is still there, the community is still suffering. Her family is still suffering. So yeah. I just couldn't go there with.
Well, I thought it was effective because you did. You ended up holding up Nikki Thrasher's picture there for everyone in the audience to see. And then you did relate that very personal story. And I thought that was very effective. And so I was glad. Hunter and I have been following this, of course, to see that reverse. Disappointed in the two counselors, Brown and Vang, that did not. And I didn't agree with their rationale behind it. But I'm hoping that this, you know, the community can move on. Mr. Hedquist can find other ways to atone, I guess, for lack of anything. So again, I did appreciate that. And I know how difficult that has to be when you're faced with a group of people that don't agree with you and you still have to make those tough decisions. So you decided to run again. And again, kudos to you for that. I mean, it is really, you are in service of the entire city, really.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit, too, because this one came up, and I want to give you a quick chance to talk about this, the Ethics Commission. We had Mayor Julie Hoy on yesterday talking about where she's at on it, and she has not signed that. You made the decision to do that. Let's talk a little bit about why.
So the reason that I decided to go ahead and sign it, and I really struggled with mm-hmm. what's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. But the reason I signed it was just for the sake of the entire council. Because, you know, as much as we have differing opinions and uh-huh. differing political leanings on sure. the city council, we do have a great deal of respect for one another. And mm-hmm. I believed that for me to drag it out any farther was just not beneficial to anyone. Okay. Not beneficial okay. to me, not beneficial to the group as a whole. I completely understand why the mayor has decided not to sign it, because mm-hmm. ultimately the outcome is the same. It's right. going to be a letter of education regardless. Mm-hmm. So that's why I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this prompted further, you know, from the city attorney and things like that, as far as clarifying what those rules are, serial meetings, quorum and things like that. Do you feel you're a lot clearer on that now?
I suppose. I mean, the reality is, even when I started on the Salem City Council, the council president met with a group of us mm-hmm. every Sunday. We went over the agenda, we went over the whys, the hows, and I mean, I think they would say now we didn't talk about how you would vote, mm-hmm. but I don't think that that's entirely true. So there would be four of us in the room on that Sunday, but then that council president was talking to another friend on the council and also talking to the mayor. So I believe that we had unknowingly had serial meetings going on for years, honestly.
Well, as long as there's not a quorum.
Well, except a serial meeting starts with... So when I was talking to Josh Sullivan, who was the investigator, so my case was because one counselor said that I said to someone else something, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even remember the... And I said to Josh, I said, are we really back to third grade telephone? Because that's because I'm telling you, I never said that. What you're telling me that this person said that I said never happened. And he goes, well, Deanna, I think that's what a serial meeting is. I go, oh, so we're third grade telephone.
So it sounds like there may be a need for some more clarification and education. Because we had former counselor Brad Nanke was on Monday show, kind of digging into a little bit more of that, his time on council and as far as quorum and what can happen and what can happen and what's okay and not okay. Let's go ahead. Again, we're talking to city councilor from Ward 4, Deanna Gwynn. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now that winter's here, that means all those winter activities are here too.
Mm-hmm. Am I doing better this time around?
Oh, totally great. Brad was saying too, you can have those. He would have those Sunday. As long as you don't have a quorum, you can talk about anything you want.
Except that then she's going and talking to the mayor and to her.
You can't tell people how to vote and you can't divulge if anybody's saying anything, but discussing issues is perfectly fine.
Right.
Council matters. Yeah. Anyway, what, Hunter?
Oh, no, I was just saying that. This he said, she said garbage. I'm going, that doesn't hold up any level of anything. But yet here we are. We're going to punish you for doing it.
Yeah.
Well, and the reality is, if I feel like I made a mistake. I didn't want to say that. I feel like I made a mistake signing it, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Okay. So we went a teeny bit, not even really long. We'll come back and talk about election. Anything else you want to hit on? You want to make sure Salem knows.
What do we want to talk about on re-election? I did get endorsed by police and fire unions yesterday. So I'm very excited about that.
We want to talk about endorsements. Are they running anybody against you, the Progs?
They are. I don't know anything about them.
We're not going to talk about whoever that is, but...
Yeah.
And then I want to give you a chance to kind of have a closing pitch on why you deserve to be reelected. So be mulling that over in your head, too.
Now you tell me.
Oh, you should know that that's coming, Deanna. You got to make your case. Why should people reelect you?
Right. Sometimes I ask myself that, though.
I know. Well, it's not easy being faced with that fire hose of hate.
Right. Right.
Believe me, I feel for you. It sucks.
And Brad did it for, 20 years?
20 years. He didn't always have the fire hose. Yeah. For half of that time, he was in the majority. Go ahead.
Right. Are we 5 seconds.
Okay.
CS Northwest, your local painting specialist. CCB number 192695.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Bi-Mart.
Bi-Mart. Did you get any ammo?
Not yet.
Hunter!
I know.
Gosh, it's right down the street.
I know. Well, I've had a few things going on.
I know. Well, we were thinking we may have to do some juggling and some creative broadcasting today. So, we didn't have to. So that's a good thing.
That's right. We made it. We made it back in time.
We did. All right. We are finishing up our conversation with Ward 4 City Councilor Deanna Gwynn. Okay. So now you've done this for 4 years, and Deanna, you decided, oh my gosh, I love this so much. I think you have a servant's heart, and I think that's where it's coming from. And so you want to serve for another 4 years. So we are now in election season because, again, this election happens in May, people. It's May. We need people to pay attention to that. So how's it going so far?
So we're off to a much better start this time around. Last time I didn't even qualify until mid-February. Ooh. So I'm qualified to be on the ballot. I met with the police and fire union presidents yesterday. Both of them have said they've signed the paperwork to endorse my campaign. So I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very excited about that.
Wow, those are great endorsements.
So I'm working on, more endorsements, trying to get the team together for door knocking and signs and all the things and raising money. That's for any candidate. Uh-huh. I think that's the hardest thing is asking people for money.
I don't know anybody who likes that.
I know. Well, and right now, a lot of my friends are real estate brokers. So some of them are really suffering. So to ask them for any amount of money, I know is a big drain on them. So for those of them that have and will, all I can say is thank you. And I will continue to show up, learn as much as I can, and be the voice for folks in Ward 4 and hopefully the majority of Salem.
Yeah, because you represent Ward 4, but also sort of, writ large, you do represent the city as well. And again, you've been in it 3 years, but there is a big learning curve, as we know when we found out from some things that have happened over the past 4 years. But the bottom line is really it is a matter of service. So you were planning to go out. I mean, there's neighborhood association meetings. Are you going to have a kickoff? What are you going to do?
I'm meeting with my campaign folks tomorrow afternoon to sort of talk about that. I believe we will. I don't know when, but
oh, you should.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah,
it kind of sets it off, because honestly, we're halfway through January. Unbelievable.
I know.
May is going to be here before you know it. What's the exact date? Is it May 19th? I figured you would know, Deanna. May 19th. And again, it's vote by mail. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff happening about vote by mail. That's at sort of the state and the national level. I would pretty much sure we're going to vote by mail. So do you enjoy going out and knocking on doors and chatting with people? What's your favorite part of campaigning?
Knocking on doors, talking to people face to face. I'm not, people probably know this about me, I'm not a huge public speaker. So to get in front of a big group is not my forte, but
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I don't like it either.
But as a realtor, I've knocked on doors for years. So it's not foreign to me, and it doesn't scare me. The only thing that's hard is, what do you do when somebody has a no soliciting sign? Some people go ahead and knock on the door. I choose not to, because I feel like, I don't know. Right. To me, it's crossing a line.
I've done a lot of campaigning for people. I do not knock on doors that have no soliciting signs.
Right.
Because I always think if that was me and I'm like, I specifically put a sign, I'd probably be a little annoyed.
Right.
Like, well, don't bother me. I'm like, get off my lawn.
I felt so bad first time around. There was a no soliciting sign, but I didn't see it. I knocked on the door, and this gentleman came to the door with his oxygen tank. And
gosh.
And he yelled at me, and I was like, I am so sorry. I did not see it. And
Well, that happens. That happens. Hunter?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that's the thing. Get a nice big group together where you make enough noise from the street that people,
there you go.
Even if they have that sign, they know something's going on and something big, something exciting.
Well, and we did some sign waving at the corner of Kubler and Commercial, and that actually was a lot of fun.
Actually, real quick, for those that don't know, and I know the wards are wonky as all get out in Salem, but Ward 4, give us a general idea of Ward 4.
And mine is super easy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So bordered on the east by I-5,
mm-hmm.
north Kubler, mm-hmm. and west Liberty. So it's basically everything south of Kubler between Liberty and I-5.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So easy.
Yeah, and this is not an at-large like the school board. You have to live in Ward 4 to vote for you. So only Ward 4 voters will see your name on their ballot.
But you don't have to be in Ward 4 to put up a sign. So last time we had signs way out on Viewcrest and on Kubler down south that's outside of the ward. Anything like on Commercial Street. So anyone that wants a sign, let us know.
Okay. Yeah. Now you're not quite there yet. You've got to get
right.
You've got to get them printed. We're a little well, you know, although and it's such a short cycle.
It's 60 days, right? I mean, yeah. I think the city.
And
says,
then you got to have them out. Otherwise, right. You get the little old men who shake their fist at the skies and go around and
the nasty
post
notes.
It on Facebook. Look at that. There's a sign still in the median there. Yeah. Get it out of there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, one of the cool things, because getting on these campaigns is fun. Door knocking is fun. Sign wavings are fun. Most people are really pretty cool about it. Every now and then you'll get somebody who, you know, will show you their IQ with their fingers. But typically, it's a lot of fun and most people are pretty positive.
For sure. Yep. I am looking forward to it. One thing that we didn't talk about is budget committee last night.
So, that's right. Thank mm-hmm. you. I forgot I had that on my notes. Yes.
That was our first budget committee meeting was last night. A couple of interesting things happened. There was one of the members brought forth a motion to reinstate a social services fund that would support. Initially, he brought it forth to support folks affected by ICE, $270,000 to be set aside. I did not support that motion.
Yeah.
First and foremost, if the city decides that we, number one, have the money and it's the right thing to get into the social services industry, I felt like we should be serving anyone that's suffering, not just folks affected by ICE. But, you know, we didn't talk about things like how is that going to be? Well, it would be administered through nonprofits, but we didn't talk about is it only for folks that live within the city limits of Salem?
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot more to it.
A lot of questions.
And then the same gentleman also sort of attacked the Chamber of Commerce. He mentioned that there's a sticker at the library saying that the library's a member of the chamber, and apparently
most businesses are
to that, right?
Yeah,
I really appreciated the mayor saying, but remember, guys, the chamber was one that stepped up and supported the levy, went on the road trip with the foundation folks, trying to get the levy approved.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was an interesting meeting.
Yeah. Budget committees, there's a lot that goes on. And those are open to the public. That was on CCTV last night.
Yep.
I did not watch, full disclosure. I do appreciate the chamber and Tom Hofford coming and speaking and representing the business community.
Yep.
It is sort of disappointing to try to see some people put a divide between, quote, the people and businesses. Yep. It's all people. So I do appreciate
and
that.
And small businesses are the backbone of our community.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I sit here and I'm like, yeah, let's scope creep, set aside money for social services when that's already there. And you can almost guarantee it's because of the threats of the federal government to withhold federal funding from states that are sanctuaries.
We need to, as a city, get back to city business.
Amen.
Now, we get all of these distractions with ICE and what was it before, the Palestine. And, you know, we need to get back to the business of the city.
Amen. Amen. And that's a great note to close on. We're just about out of time with you again. Deanna Gwynn, running for Ward 4 City Council for re-election. I'll share your information in our show notes. Deanna, great to see you and best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this lovely Thursday. And continuing with politics today, we're going to broaden out things a little bit more to state races. And welcome to the show, current Marion County Commissioner and also gubernatorial candidate for the great state of Oregon, Republican gubernatorial candidate, Danielle Brown. Danielle, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
I'm happy to be here. It's nice to talk to you guys.
And it's Danielle Bethel.
I was wondering where the brown came from, but we would get there. I wasn't going to jump in with the correction. It's not like you haven't known me for years.
Exactly. I'm like, we go way, way back. I can't even believe that. That's funny. I've got too many things going on. Anyway, we are delighted to have you. It has been a while. So like I said, you're currently Marion County Commissioner, but you are running for governor. We are now on the 15th of January, and the primary is coming up. So you've got to get through a primary. So let's talk to you. Where are you at now? How's the campaign going? You've been running for a bit.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, in general, the campaign's going very well. It has a great positive vibe across the state. Like anybody who's running for statewide office for the first time, there's challenges that I'm taking face on. I have to get my name ID out there, and I need to earn money in order to get on TV. So those are the two biggest hurdles, which are standard in most campaigns. But in general, I've been out on the campaign trail since April of 2025 into a lot of counties and cities across the state, and I'm hearing the same things from local individuals that they want a drastic change in Oregon, and they're excited for what this May and then November will bring us.
Well, and one of the things I like about your campaign is you're a business owner. You've signed the front of checks. You're a problem solver. You've been out there doing it. You have been involved in politics. This isn't, you're just like jumping out of nowhere to run for governor. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. It's a different space to be in, obviously being in the political climate in a state that has a majority of the legislature and obviously the governor's office owned by left-leaning politicians who none have signed the front of a paycheck and sitting at a table or debating them on issues that they just can't actually understand because they've never really truly experienced them firsthand. I think that's what people are looking for in the state is for people to say, hey, I actually really understand this. This is what I believe can be different. And because I have the executive experience as a county commissioner in the fifth largest county in the state, I can tie those things together and bring a very different presence of leadership and outcome to that office.
So I know you were president of the Association of Oregon Counties, which brought you to all 36 of Oregon's counties. And Oregon is kind of like two states. I mean, you've got sort of east and south and the west and the northwest. Talk to us a little bit about your experience going and traveling in those states, because there are different issues in each in the counties.
Yeah, so the Association of Oregon Counties has a kind of a tagline or a saying, when you've seen one county, you've seen one county. And that is true. Yeah. There's not one single county in any of the 36 that is the same as the next. The only thing that's the same is maybe the border they share and also maybe the conflict that they have with state government. You know, when you go to a frontier county, you're dealing with a lot of distance between systems. You have a lot less population, so things cost more and you have a lot less service because, they don't have as much tax to generate in order to have systems online. When you go to the rural counties, which have a little more people but are still very remote, you can have a little more system and a little more services, but a lot more challenges because you don't have enough of anything to be competitive and or to really kind of engage in progress. And then they're also, of course, competing with urban counties, which the main five counties, the main five urban counties, they're set up so differently. Not one of us big five counties operates the same, whether that's statutorily or by charter, but even how we deliver our systems are very different. It's been a unique and enlightening experience to me to be able to do that, especially in my role as a county commissioner and as a president of the association, because it gave me a different opportunity. I wasn't a threat coming in as a partisan politician. I was there as a true partner to listen and understand, and now I have a real good playbook to operate from.
Yeah, I think that's really got to be very, very valuable experience. And so nationally, and as far as how you would govern Oregon, I mean, there's a lot of people, I think, left, right, and center that are really looking for a change. And we've got a lot of national issues that are going to start to really press down on Oregon. And I'm thinking about sort of sanctuary state status. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as an Oregonian in general, I'm frustrated with the sanctuary state status. I'm frustrated from a political perspective as a county commissioner and then also as a candidate. If I'm blessed to win the primary in May and press Governor Kotek into November for her seat, we're going to talk a lot about the sanctuary state in status in Oregon, the cost on taxpayers and the burden on the systems that that particular law has over us right now. There's such a lack of transparency for the average Oregonian to understand what their emotional capacity is driving versus their fiscal capacity is receiving. And we need to have that conversation in the public forum as long and as hard as possible so everybody understands it. I don't entirely agree with the way some of the things are being deployed from the federal administration. I think that there's healthier ways to go about accountability. But I do believe with the premise, and I understand the reasoning behind it. And I do also feel that if the governor and the attorney general weren't so combative with the president and the other cabinet members in his space, we wouldn't be at, I think, at this volatile level. I think that ICE is an example. Not that they would be notifying local law enforcement of their behaviors, but I don't know that they would be as aggressive and as sweeping as they are, because I think that there's a threat that they feel because the blue side of the state leadership is so threatening to them. They have to be reactive. I don't really think that's the way we should be doing it, because I think it's harmful to our communities as a whole, as we've seen with the response that happened in Portland, but also here in my own county, in my community. There are things happening that I think would be handled differently if we had a different style of a leader in the governor's office.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough on that. Real quick, too, because one of the roles you've served in the past was a school board member for Salem-Keizer School District. Yeah. And then, of course, we all look at the stats and the sort of the dismal state of affairs in Oregon education. So talk to us a little bit about your priorities for education of Oregon's kids.
Yeah, well, education needs to go back to the local level, just like all other systems of government. I really, really believe that government should be run from the bottom up, not the top down. The Oregon Department of Education is so far removed from every single school district and the community and cultures that they represent that they're just a dictator, and they're designing policy and demanding outcomes. One, that most school districts outside of those large urban areas can't produce because they have limited resources and their capacity is so tight. But two, they're creating policies that don't align with the cultures in all of our communities. And I think that's a disservice to the awareness that, one, the governor is a state superintendent of education has. I mean, she's completely off base. We need to get back to basics in education. Let's focus on academics. Let's get kids into the space of comprehension so we're really raising good learners that can be successful in their careers in the future, and away from a lot of the social aspect of what's being imposed in our classrooms today. It's out of balance. I think that there is conversations that need to happen, and I want to have those conversations in every community and make sure that we can design classroom capacity and education outcomes that really meet the needs of the cultures of our communities. And there's very, very many of them across the state.
Yeah. I like that. The one size fits all, that never works. I mean, something that would work over in Baker City, you know, isn't necessarily going to work in Salem or Keizer. So I think that, yeah, to stop with the cookie cutter approach. Lastly, before we run out of time with you, as a parent, as a family, as a wife, I mean, how is it going that way? Is the family on board with this? Because this is a big undertaking.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, my family and I spent some time really thoughtfully navigating this, knowing that there was going to be some bumps and some ugliness to it, and really processed the emotion and energy around how we would navigate it. And as of late, unless you live under a rock, I've been in the news quite a bit. And I'm not going to lie, it's been difficult, but we know why we're doing this. It's not just me. I'm not doing it myself. We all believe that Oregon deserves better leadership. I'm raising children and grandchildren in Oregon, and because of that lens, when I talk to my children and ask them about their own children or their nieces, they can always say, yeah, we need to do better, and this is worth it. Let's put our best foot forward and really force the conversation and demand better. And I'm a firm believer that you shouldn't show up and complain if you're not willing to show up and do something. And here I am trying to do something for everyone in the state, and I really want it to work out.
Amen, and I agree with you on that sentiment as well. We got more than enough keyboard warriors. We need people that are going to take action. And like I said, I appreciate you kind of going through and getting a lot of experience under your belt and doing all that. We're out of time with you, Danielle. What's your website if people want to check you out? You know, send a little cash your way. They want to volunteer. I'm sure you've got contact information for people that want to help.
Yes, ma'am. It's DanielleBethelForGovernor.com, and they just need to know that there's two L's in both of my names.
Okay, I like that. And I'm looking at my sheet, and I have Danielle Bethel on my sheet with two L's. So,
Yeah, I know. Thank
we
you
appreciate
guys.
You. Okay, right. Thanks, Danielle. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for running, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, all right. We're going to take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Pearland Mill and Cozy's New York Deli.
Cozy's, I'm actually watching my weight, and I would have to carve out some calories for Cozy's. So
virtually the sandwich you normally get, which lasts you 2 days, could last you three or four that way.
It would probably have to last me three or four if I wanted to. You chop it up into, you know, because basically losing weight is less calories in. And so I would have to, you know, cut the gabagool into little teeny tiny pieces. Well, so good to have those wonderful ladies on the show. Deanna, again, city councilor for Ward 4, and Danielle Bethel, running for Oregon, the Republican nomination. Again, she's got a primary to go through. Mm-hmm. What are there, like 10, I think, so far?
The last list I saw was 8, I believe, and it didn't even have, and that was prior to Drazen announcing, like a day or two before. Yeah. So I think it's around 9.
Dudley's still kind of teasing it out there. We don't know about that.
Yeah, I wonder if that's more people kind of wishful thinking than it is even him throwing it out there.
Because he ran in 2010 and came probably the closest as anybody had. But that's 15, 16 years ago. A lot. I mean, the name recognition, well,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, 15, 16 years ago, he was coming off of being a Portland Trailblazer. So he had some current name recognition. I don't know how that would resonate now. It's just that kind of pseudo-celebrity status.
Right. And that really, the money and the name recognition are really the keys to the whole thing. And that is hard to, especially when you're on a statewide level. So, in chatting with Danielle again, having been president of the Association of Oregon Counties, you get out there and you get to meet people, which is very helpful. So we were talking on the break, too, just about the current governor, which I don't know anybody who likes. And please vote for change. Good grief. Yeah. But there's been a new appointment, and I saw the news come in on this, and I thought, interesting.
So, you remember what, about a month ago or maybe even less than that, when she got out and did a press conference and says, we're going to have a new, appoint someone for, I don't even remember the official name of it, but it's pretty much to figure out ways to improve the way businesses operate in Oregon and improve business overall.
Like a prosperity czar.
Yeah. And then, I'm going to, appoint this position. I'm sure it's a nice salary, and then we'll put committee around them.
Oh, yeah.
And so the announcement came. It was Tim Canope.
Yeah, Republican.
Republican. And I sit here and said, okay, number one, you're in a Democrat-controlled state. Your governor is not going to let you sit here and say, let's do things like cut fees or streamline processes.
Conservative things?
Yeah. I don't think those are ever going to make it all the way through, but, the idea can throw up. And then I sit here and go, you know what this really is about? Let's, get a campaign point where she can say, look, I work across the aisle. I appointed a Republican to run this very important business building, faction.
Yeah. I've been kind of watching the recent, and again, social media is not the real world, but a lot of people are kind of a little on it. I mean, I met former Representative Canope, right? He was in the House.
I think, and he ran for governor a few years back.
Did he? I don't know. And I was like, is it Canope or Canope? No, I think it's Canope. But and he's accepted the position to my knowledge, and so good for him for that. I'm a little concerned. Like, I think the optics on it is, I think the governor right now is very worried potentially about her reelection. I've been seeing a lot of things about vote by mail. A lot of social media influencers and folks that have some voices, online voices in the state, talking about, the vote by mail thing with the 800,000 votes being cleaned off the rolls. There's a bunch of stuff happening that could shift the outcome and maybe put it in favor of getting Danielle Bethel elected. So,
and then the fact that she said, this emergency, we have to have a special session so we can have this gas tax or else our roads are going to fall apart. And then she delay. away, and then a record-setting, you know, a quarter of a million people signed a petition to get it on the ballot. Now she wants to just, let's throw it all out and pretend it never happened, so that's not on the ballot. We don't want to see that on the ballot. Come on.
So, and I don't know who posted this again. I don't have my screens up in front of me, but again, talk about now that that's off there. Of course, the Democrats are planning for a sales tax, because we all know how Oregonians, Pride, we, haven't ever had it. It was, New Hampshire, and no, that was the gas thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I think New Jersey doesn't have a sales tax, but Oregon always does. But they sneak in little things where you're like the cat tax.
Yeah, I think officially there's like six or seven states that don't have a sales tax, but they have plenty of other fees and things like that that you know should be qualified as sales taxes, but because they don't call them a sales tax, they're not a sales tax.
It's a fee, Hunter. It's just a fee.
Yeah.
And of course, you know that fee. This goes, yes, that they're not going to, you know, it might think, okay, you want to add a sales tax, fine. I mean, if you're, and which, you know, all taxation is theft. There's the libertarian in me coming out. But if you're going to add that in, what are you going to take away? How about property tax? How about income tax?
They won't. But take any. No, this is Oregon. They don't take anything
we're
away.
We're going to add it to the layer cake of taxes.
And that way you just don't notice it so much. Come on.
Right?
Well, I mean, I sit here and I look at all the little, you know, nickel and dimes, and then, you know, we're struggling financially. Well, we can't do anything to help. That has to be at the federal level. Huh? No. There's lots of things you can do.
Well, it's interesting. When talking with Danielle, talking about sanctuary state status, you've got the Trump administration saying that they're not going to be, no Fed money will be withheld from sanctuary state/cities beginning on February 1st. That is going to have trickle down a lot of impact in all of those states. And so that is a pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see, because that's going to affect not only sort of the government budgets, it'll affect NGO budgets, it'll affect any organization that gets federal money is going to be affected by this.
Well, you know, and sadly, the things that we are starting to see, whether it's daycare centers in Minnesota,
Leering
and Washington
centers.
State, whether it's, you know, medical facilities that you know, there's 25 in a building and none of them have any people in them, whatever.
The latest one is transportation companies in retail stores.
Yeah. So I mean, all these scenarios, I sit here and go, there needs to be a halt on handing out money until there's some investigations into these things and we get to the bottom of it. And unfortunately, media-wise, of course, that's hit the back burner completely now. But if our local governments, our state governments, our city governments, and these NGOs could all kind of get together and say, let's get this cleaned up as quick as possible, so if they are legit, they can get their funding right back. That's a logical way of handling things.
Right.
But instead, you know, especially here in Oregon in the left coast, all we're getting is pushback and then lawsuits. We're going to file, I'm sure there's going to be multiple lawsuits filed between Oregon, Washington, California, you know, about this freeze starting on February 1st.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you talk about as far as these things happening in the past and what's happening in red states versus blue states, where you're seeing, you know, ICE agents going in and they're just enforcing federal immigration law. And you're not hearing about the video and what is coming out of Minneapolis is nauseating. It's absolutely disgusting. It's very hard to watch what's happening. And you want to talk about everyone, January 6th, go look at the video coming out of Minneapolis right now and then talk to me about January 6th.
So I've had a very busy morning, but I still managed to catch two videos that really kind of stuck out to me. One was in Minneapolis, and both of them are Minneapolis, but one of them, they pulled a truck up and tied a rope around a weapons box that was in the back of a federal car and yanked it out, drove it down the road. They couldn't get into it, but they were trying to. And I'm sitting there going, so virtually have people that are stealing weapons, guns.
Yep.
These aren't,
and they've got documents, things like that, because those, they had to be abandoned. And again, the bottom line, the simple, and if you watch that Jacob Fry, what an odious cretin that guy is. And he's talking about, how would you like it if people came into your community that didn't share your values? I'm like, wait, you're kind of making the point on the other side here, dude. Do you not see that? But the bottom line is, it's federal immigration law. Cooperate. Mm-hmm. They're getting out the worst of the worst. This is worse and becoming dangerous for Minnesotans, for Minneapolisans. I don't know what residents of Minneapolis.
That's right.
It's your governor that is making this worse. It's your mayor that is making this more dangerous.
Well, and it trickles down to other very left-leaning states like Portland, where now you're getting, you know, gang members are running into police officers when they get approached. I'm just sitting here going, you know, when you're empowering the criminal element to do what they want, these are the results you're going to get. And for the regular people, the people that are driven by emotion and hitting the streets and causing these problems and chasing down the, you know, what are they called now, the legal observers, I sit here and go, you do realize that your leadership is promoting you to do things that they would never do themselves.
Yeah. You're cannon fodder.
Yeah. You're virtually, yeah, the front line
expendable.
Of a war. Yeah. Yeah. And they don't shed a tear when something bad happens to you.
Two craps about you. Yeah, it's all just, it's so awful. And again, the news cycle every day, the fresh hell. Every day there's a little bit of fresh hell.
Oh, well,
very fresh. It's very fresh.
It's going to be so interesting to see what this weekend brings because, you know, with
there's
another.
There's calls for the Insurrection Act to be invoked.
Yeah,
I know.
With another shooting in Minneapolis, unfortunately. Yeah. I think things are going to get a little crazy as this weekend comes and goes. So we will have probably plenty of show prep for Monday.
Yes, we will. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us this week. Go out, enjoy the weekend, and we will see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.